When you hear this song on the airwaves, you can only know one thing. The show is back after a semester that was hectic.
Quite eventful.
Eventful. Well, more uneventful than anything else. With nothing going on whatsoever other than this.
Very true.
But it's good to be back. We had a Thanksgiving break that was long, basically because it tied into Christmas break, which was also long. No one was complaining, which was good, because, I mean, when you're off for a considerable amount of time, why would you complain about that? So we're happy to be back. We kind of wish the break was here again, just so summer can get here, which would mean Baldwin Wiffle Ball's back.
Baldwin Wiffle, baby!
But
still waiting for that documentary.
Oh, yeah, and we will get it. We'll get into the documentary a little bit at the end of the show. But we are back. Here we are in the radio room with the boys, Austin Bechtold, Nathan Breisinger, Andrew Govesh, as always. Anybody have any eventful surprises, notable stories that they would like to lead off the show with from over the break?
I mean, like you said, I mean, nothing really happened. I mean, I didn't really get the chance to do much with my big break. I mean, I literally didn't do much.
You didn't get to watch any Big Brother? Because I didn't either.
You didn't watch any?
No, I started watching Friends.
Oh, I did see the stories of Friends.
Yeah, Friends is awesome.
I never watched Friends.
I did not have anything extremely exciting going on over break, just relatively normal break. Glad to be on it, though, because last semester was a bit rough.
Last semester was rough. It was also rough for the Steelers to end the season. You know, rough is probably not even the correct word for how the season ended.
It was disappointing and sad.
It was a slap in the face.
Yeah. You know, like when, you know, a tree falls in the forest and you wonder if it makes a sound. Govesh, does it make a sound?
Yes. Of course it would make a sound.
I want to know if there were any sounds in that stadium. Because remember, there were no fans. I want to know if there were any sounds when Marquise Pouncey snapped the ball over Ben Roethlisberger's head.
I guarantee you there was.
I want to know, did a pin drop? Could anybody hear it on the Steelers sideline at least? Because you know the Browns were frantically partying like it was 1994 over there already, one play in. And why wouldn't they? Who would have ever expected that the playoffs would start off like that for a Cleveland franchise?
I mean, no one could have. I mean, I don't even understand what was happening. I mean, Pouncey didn't play good the whole game, to be quite honest with you. And that kind of set the tone for how the rest of the game was going to go. You know, that bad snap and then, you know, the next play, the interception. I mean, the Steelers, they just didn't get off to a good start whatsoever.
I agree. The first play really set the tone. And I think once they realized after that, you know, terrible play, they almost self-imploded. And they never were able to regain where they had, you know, played the
previous...
Well,
they eventually did get it together, but it was already too late. It was too late at that point.
Yeah, it was too late, and, you know, you had to expect that at some point Roethlisberger was just going to kind of come back from the grave, and, you know, you ever see that meme or that video when that truck is driving on the road and that guy just appears out of the coffin and he starts dancing around. That's kind of what Ben was trying to pull when the second half started and the Steelers were down by such an abysmal amount of points that it was so hard to be able to come back from. They weren't going to pull a Bills upset over the Oilers from 93. That just was not going to happen. It was just that colossal of a comeback that was not even, you know, and I do kind of think that if fans were in the stands that maybe it would make somewhat of a difference, because you know that, you know, they're beyond them completely after just the first play. So I'm not going to try to over exaggerate the idea that fans would change the outcome of the game.
I think it potentially could.
I think that it would play a factor in how the game would transpire. But at the same time, we also saw a packed Heinz Field against a Jaguars team that went to the AFC Championship game that they couldn't stop anything.
No.
They couldn't stop anything.
They couldn't stop Blake Bortles.
No. My grandmother, Mimi Patty, could have ran through the offensive line that Jacksonville was putting out there. They were blocking fantastic for Fournette. Blake Bortles was slinging it around defense.
Like who? Marquise Lee? I don't even know.
I think Allen Robinson was on that team. Maybe. Actually, he might have been hurt.
He might have been hurt or he was on the Bears.
Yeah.
I don't even recall where the receivers were.
No, that was not that great of a team. But yeah, big shout out to Mimi Patty. But, you know, I just feel like the direction for the team, okay, And I've talked to people in the industry. I've texted around
I have my sources.
Not my sources, but just people that do what we are trying to do. And okay, this was a couple days after the game. So I text one of the guys that I know in local sports radio. Great dude. I don't know if I should mention it. I don't know if he'd want to be mentioned, honestly. I don't know. But what he said to me was, I believe in Mason Rudolph. I trust Mason Rudolph. Now, look, Mason Rudolph is not going to carry a team like Ben has done in the past. But if you surround him with a pretty satisfactory defense, a solid defense at that, a running game, and an offensive line that blocks for you like the Colts do for anybody back behind their line, you're going to win 11 or so games.
Exactly. I mean, look what they did last year with Duck Hodges back there. I mean, Mason Rudolph had the chance to play. He got hurt. He didn't play bad. But then in the performance he had against Cleveland, you know, last game of the season, he looked relatively good. I would rather build around him or Dwayne Haskins, draft some offensive lineman, and get your running back that they've been so desperately needing, which at this point you need one.
I mean, it has to be Najee Harris or ETN at some point.
All right, so let's talk about this then, because I wanted to get into this. I like Najee Harris a lot, okay? You know I don't like Alabama players very much. Najee Harris is just built different.
I mean, Alabama running backs are pretty solid.
Yeah, they've had their history. I mean, Henry at first was a bust, but now he's the best running back in the league.
Mark Ingram was okay.
Then he went to Baltimore, and he was pretty good. You know, they're spotty because, you know, Saban runs their wheels off pretty quickly. Najee Harris just seems different the way he's built. He's got tree trunks for legs. He moves. He's so elusive.
He's literally built different.
He's a bowling ball. He's what, you know, A.J. Dillon put up a bunch of numbers at Boston College. If you put, you know, 4.4 speed on A.J. Dillon and have him jump over people, that's Najee Harris. And that's why you're seeing Dillon get some carries with the Packers, but he's nowhere near what I think Najee Harris is going to be. No. And, you know, my problem with where the Steelers are positioned in the draft, you are not going to pick a running back at 24 in the first round when your center's probably going to retire, even though Ben's going to try to convince him not to. Your offensive tackle, Villanueva, is washed. Great dude, but he got exposed against Myles Garrett and multiple other pass rushers. He's done. He was contemplating retirement before this. Chukwuma Okorafor, I guess, is okay. I don't know. Kevin Dodson's your best offensive lineman.
Exactly.
You got a DeCastro. I'm not sure if it was he had to help out struggling Pouncey or if he had to help out struggling Okorafor, and they weren't able to pull him as much, and that's why he was not having as great of a season. But Golvash, remember, Pouncey and DeCastro, they made the Pro Bowl.
They made the Pro Bowl.
And, oh, the Pro Bowl means so much. It's just, you know, I heard something. Ryan Tannehill was so upset that he did not make the Pro Bowl. Now, look, I get it for the players that making the Pro Bowl for them is a big achievement, big accomplishment. And, you know, of course you'd want to be on it.
Yeah.
But
it's a fan vote at the end.
Let's be real here. There's no reason why Marquise Pouncey should have made the Pro Bowl this year. It's by name and name alone. Minka Fitzpatrick appeared in about 4 games this year and was silent the whole rest of the season. You didn't see him.
That is because no one decided to throw at him.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that part of it is he plays that free safety role, of the fact that he plays it so well that you never see him in the picture because the Steelers never got beat deep this year, really.
Not really. Yeah.
And that's partly because of Minka, but that's also, you know, part of the reason why you say, oh, he disappeared because he didn't make that many plays.
Yeah, because they didn't throw him the ball and give him enough chances to make
it. Because he wasn't really tested. I would like to see him play more of a strong safety role because Edmonds can't tackle. He got better. Like Edmonds got a lot better. Edmonds was my he's getting there, improving, but player of the year.
He fed off the defense. That's the thing.
Yeah,
he sort of fit right in. That's why he definitely had a lot of.
I kind of like his position there, that strong safety, and I kind of like how they kind of have Edmonds like the big hitter if he ever gets one off.
Yeah,
and then like Minka's more of the conservative, you know, ball hawk type. So it's like kind of like a secondary that goes hand in hand.
It's good.
Yeah, it's a secondary that goes hand in hand with each other.
Yeah. All right. Now, another. There's so many problems with this team, and we'll get into whether Ben should return.
If we went into all the problems with this team, it would take us probably. It would take us a long time.
I mean, the Steelers right now are still the main talking point. We'll get into Pens. We'll get into Little Pirates and what's going on with them. But
Little Pirates.
Well, we have to talk about the Pirates trades because there's a direction. But what's the direction with the Steelers in free agency? Because Mike Hilton's a free agent. Cam Sutton's a free agent. You got to decide which one of those two guys you're going to bring back. You probably can't bring back both. You got to figure out what you're doing with your offensive line, because right now, let's hypothetically say Pouncey retires. Okay, you have no center. You're not bringing back Villanueva. You have no left tackle.
Matt Filer's
a free agent. You probably sign him back cheap.
You probably sign Filer.
Zach Banner's a free agent. I don't even think he's a starter, but you might want to bring him back for depth anyway.
Exactly.
I don't truly trust or believe in what I see from Okorafor, like I mentioned earlier, or even Filer at this point. Filer cannot play guard. No. He just can't. You got to move him back out of tackle if you want to keep him. But also free agents is Juju. Juju dancing on logos is a free agent. Now, I don't know if you really want to be able to have Juju and Dwayne Haskins making TikToks in the locker room or out on Mount Washington. I don't know how much fun that'll be to watch, but I honestly don't see a way that Juju comes back. One, because of the cap. Two, because I think the fans are turning on him. And three, because of what happened with the whole thing with his mother was getting threats because Juju was, you know, here he is. I'm gonna go dance on logos. We're gonna have a good time. This is so unorthodox of what the Steeler way, the standard is. Now, at the same time, you could say, "Oh, Austin, AB and Bell were terrible." Yes, it's somewhat of a point that they kind of set the standard, and Tomlin had tried to hush it. That's why you didn't hear much from Brown until the final couple weeks of when his tenure and on the team.
Whenever he completely lost his mind,
Le'Veon Bell just wanted the money. He just wanted to get paid. And supposedly from a lot of people that know the organization well and have reported it, there is so much more that happened that Tomlin kept quiet that no one knows about that it's got to be pretty interesting. But AB, when he did most of his social media, was other than the Facebook Live after the playoff game, it was mostly, you know, after his Steeler tenure and after he said, "I want out." But with Juju, I just cannot fathom the argument. He's still a kid. He's young. One, he's the oldest receiver on the team. So, I mean, it doesn't account for much. He's still 24? He's 24. This is your fourth year in the league. You're a veteran on the team. You know, I'm over this "he's young, let's have fun" mentality. You're in your fourth year. You should be a pro and a veteran at that point. Now, I've also said, Juju, you can dance all you want in the end zone. You're scoring touchdowns. I don't care what dance you do. Clearly, Mason Rudolph cared when he shoved you in the back and said, "Let's go with it. We're trying to run a 2-point conversion in Cleveland to tie the game." You know, I don't know if Rudolph gave him a nice little shove to say, "All right, nice job, Juju. You scored a touchdown. Or if it was, "Let's go with it. Let's get back in the huddle."
Probably a mix of both.
But is it fair to say that This gotta end? Even Tomlin, when it's being asked to Tomlin multiple times in the media, then it's becoming a distraction that's so unnecessary for this team that Juju should just, you know, get over it. Stop doing all that. Take a break maybe from TikTok. You know, Chase Claypool, maybe not say the Browns are gonna get clapped next week. What is wrong with these guys going on social media thinking that they can just have a soundboard to the media? Do they not have a soundboard to any of their friends? Can they not say it to themselves in the locker room and keep it there? Why does it have to be public? I don't get it.
I agree. It's just sort of mind-boggling keep it in your mouth. Keep it in your head. Don't bring it up.
That's just the day and age that we're living in. Where people feel the need to express themselves. But like you said, I mean, it's a team matter. And like, you have to keep those kind of stuff inside the team. But even then, it could be preparing yourself for a life after football.
I'm done with that. I am done with this life after football thing. Okay, Juju is 24. Now, I know that I made the argument he's 24. He should be the wise old veteran and act a little bit like he's a pro. And don't get me wrong, Juju does a lot of great things for the community. We all see it. We all know it. He does a lot of great stuff for the community. That can't be denied. But the fact that this has to be such a constant story throughout the whole part of the season, I said probably halfway through year two, maybe the beginning of year three for Juju, he's going to start becoming a distraction like Brown was. Now, he's not the same character. He does not have the same character as Brown. He does not.
The distraction comes in a different way.
But, yes, the distraction comes in a way that is still unnecessary to the team, to the point where, and you cannot tell me in any world that it does not motivate the other team. Because when you see Buffalo,
it did for Buffalo,
when you see Buffalo and Josh Allen just using it as motivation, saying it in their speeches to fire each other up, Juju's there. He is. He's dancing on logos. Players are in the background of the video warming up when Juju's dancing. And then again, Cincinnati, when he gets absolutely smacked going across the middle, here comes the Bengals right after the game. Here they come with their comments. Don't let Juju do that against us. We're gonna pop them. The Browns doing the Corvette after the playoff game. It's just, I don't see. Now look, people have made the argument that Juju's dancing does not have an effect on the overall outcome of the game.
It doesn't have an effect on the overall outcome of the game.
No, it does not. But it still adds a distraction of what? Why do we have to talk about it? What is the point of talking about this when there's so many other issues on the team, like the aging offensive line, the quarterback that looks like a China doll where you can't move him around, you can't run a quarterback sneak, you can't touch him. The secondary sometimes is non-existent. Steven Nelson falls down about three times a game. You're on your fifth middle linebacker at times. You're playing Jerome Elliott at middle linebacker occasionally because that one week Spillane was hurt and Vince Williams was on COVID.
Avery Williamson was invisible the rest of the year.
Who was the other dude? Marsh?
Cassius Marsh.
Yeah.
Now, I like Cassius Marsh. He's wild, man. He's ready to go out there and hit anybody that comes in his sight. But what do you guys make of this Juju thing? And even Chase Claypool, I really hope that he's not going to become the same part of this problem. You know, can Claypool's a Notre Dame guy. You know, he should know a little bit better than this. Now, I'm not saying that you can't occasionally do this, but look, why I like James Washington and Deontay Johnson so much, even though Johnson, you know, drops the ball like. He can't catch a cold occasionally.
He's quiet.
He is so quiet. He's the best route runner on the team. He goes out there. He does his job. If he posts anything, it's on Twitter saying, "Good W, guys." That's it.
As any normal NFL player.
James Washington goes out there, hunts, chops wood on his farm, and catches bricks to prepare for the offseason. I think the last part's right.
James Washington, they
barely use him. Because, oh, he can do everything. Well, maybe use him a little bit more. And he makes tough comeback plays.
I mean, he's easily.
James Washington had a whole drive in that Browns game where he was just, oh, ball to James Washington. Next pass to James Washington. Oh, he's got 60 yards on this drive. So
he was easily, he's easily one of our better deep ball guys.
Now, look, Chase Claypool is a physical specimen. Mm-hmm. You cannot guard that guy at times running down the field. His speed and height he's just built different.
Well, he needs to get someone that can throw him a deep ball effectively because Ben just can't really do that anymore.
Wow, well, we've seen Ben's ability to throw the ball late in that game. He's still got the arm strength. He can still sling it.
I know.
They were still able to put up.
His accuracy has definitely
the accuracy.
Especially on that deep ball.
But Govesh, what do you think of Juju? What do you think of this whole thing? Am I wrong? Am I out of my mind for really over exaggerating? I'm not trying to go as far as, you know, ban him from the earth like maybe others in the media may be trying to do. I just think tone it down a little bit. I don't want the needed distraction. I don't want the necessary talk in the media. It's just fueling a narrative that isn't needed, and it's just unfortunate because of course people are going to talk about it. It's just not needed.
But I think you make a good case. I mean, all those points you said were right, but I just believe just throw the dude off the team just because you know, he's making – I mean, it is a distraction. But, I mean, during that playoff game, I mean, he kind of, like, he came alive.
He was the best receiver on the team.
He was one of the better receivers on the field in general. He was one of the best receivers on that field. And it just shows you, like, when it comes to show up, he does eventually show up. And then he does put up, you know, solid numbers. It's not, you know, great, number one receiver type numbers, but it's still, you know, serviceable numbers. I mean, albeit to the distractions, he did have a very, you know, good season when it comes with all the other receivers getting targets.
Yeah, it was fine.
I thought he had a good bounce back season from last year.
Yeah, and I mean, you know that he's going to be better than he did the year before when, you know, a quarterback called Duck is throwing him at wobbly passes. So, you know, he wanted Ben back. He said, I'll prove it with Ben, who I am and who I can be. And I think the season was kind of average at times for him just because Johnson and Claypool are also really good. I still think Johnson's the best receiver on the team. If you can just, you know,
I mean, I feel
maybe,
like I
maybe
feel
go
like,
catch some bricks with James Washington out there and improve his hands a little bit.
I mean,
bit.
As of right now, I think it's Johnson, but I think Claypool will probably end up surpassing him at some point.
Probably. I mean, Claypool, there's no reason why Claypool shouldn't be with his size.
It would be disappointing.
Yeah, it would be. Just the way he's able to run routes and his speed is outrageous for his height.
Mapletron.
I mean, he's a physical specimen. Nate, what do you make of the Juju feel? You know, you're a little bit more reserved in your opinions of, you know, criticizing people. You know, am I going a little extreme? I don't think I'm that out there.
Like I said, I think it's a certain gripe to have.
I think it's a very fair point. I don't think that anybody should deny the fact that Juju dancing on logos and putting it out there is a distraction and that people, mainly players, are even looking at it. What say you?
I agree with what most of you guys are saying. I think at this point, it's sort of you have to pick a side. I mean, if you're going to be a professional football player, I know obviously TikTok's a thing nowadays, social media, everything. Every player does it. Not every player.
The Bengals love knocking that TikTok influencer down to the ground and forcing that fumble.
But not every player does it, but a lot of people do. I mean, Chase Claypool, to a certain degree. Chase Claypool, he's on YouTube. He's posting videos, but Juju takes it to the extreme for no reason when he doesn't need to. Whenever he was told to stop dancing on logos, he didn't listen. And then here he goes. Well, you remember what he said.
He said they don't want me to be me.
Exactly.
Remember?
Yes.
Well, I was going to make the point. That's just always, you know, who he's kind of really been. You know, this outgoing
guy.
We've
talked about this for the past year and a half. I mean, what is he doing outside of the game? Is he practicing or is he making TikToks? Because damn well before the game, he's focusing on making TikToks.
Oh, yeah.
Not warming up. I mean, for God's sakes, they're losing against the Browns in the playoffs, and you see him doing the Corvette dance during the game. Yes.
I forgot about that, and I remember seeing that video. I remember seeing that video, and Juju even like made a comment on it. And it wasn't even like derogatory to his dancing. He was just like, yeah, once again, I'm dancing. Look. And then after the season.
I would like to say there's a fine line between, like, you know, happy-go-lucky and being careless.
You took the word right out of my mouth, happy-go-lucky. He's a happy-go-lucky guy. And it's a good thing. He's a positive guy.
He could be positive. There's no problem with
but
that.
But as I said, there's just a fine line between being that type of person, someone who just doesn't seem to care.
He takes that immaturity level a little bit too far. And that's the thing. He's the oldest receiver on the team. He needs to find that responsibility, that maturity level that being a leader has. Maybe he's not ready to be a leader. Maybe he's not going to do well in other teams.
Or maybe he's just not even that type of person. Maybe he's just not a leader.
I don't know if he is a leader. Now, I do think that at heart, I do think he has a good heart. I think that he has good intentions. Now, I also think that he thinks of himself more as he thinks he could do both, like you guys mentioned. Now, Juju does not understand and realize the idea of time and place. Juju, if you're on the beach,
if you're in the off season,
let's say you and Claypool in the middle of July decide, let's go down to Florida, let's go on the beach, normal times, and let's go out there and do some dances. Okay, fine, I don't care. But when you're in week 16, week 15, and you're out there dancing on a Buffalo logo against a team that's probably the hardest team you faced all season on Sunday
and
Night
one
Football
of the best teams
in a game that you have to win, and you have to be able to answer questions about it after the fact, after you guys get absolutely smacked in the second half to where Buffalo looks like the real deal, and you continue to look like a team that's spiraling out of control and not going to be able to pick up the pieces, which was the case when you finish 1-5 to finish the year. You got to blame part of it on distractions and a little bit of immaturity.
Do you blame it on Tomlin for not trying to reel him in as much?
Tomlin, here's what they could do, honestly. If Juju's around next year in Claypool, they need to implement some sort of no phones like 2 hours before the game. Why not?
Yeah,
hopefully
yeah,
keeps them from being distracted.
That's not a bad idea.
That's what a lot of organizations, I'm sure, do. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people aren't on their phones prior to games.
You know, and I hate to bring them up. You don't see any of this out of New England.
Exactly.
And they got Cam. And look, Cam sucked this year. He was bad.
He's also somewhat on social media, so.
Yeah, Cam. Look, okay. Kansas City. Everybody, it's kind of hard to hate Kansas City. Mahomes is really likable. Tyreek Hill's not. Travis Kelce, give or take. But you don't see, you know, Mahomes does a million commercials. Baker does a million commercials.
Mm-hmm. But they're in the right time and place.
Look, Baker went from running from the cops, grabbing his junk at the other team, to Baker's a leader. Baker says the right thing to the media. Baker goes out there, stays quiet, motivates his team. Baker goes out there and talks to fans who are going through really tough illnesses. Baker's a good dude. He's a good leader. Now, I'm not trying to jump aboard the Browns hype train, but Baker right now, if I'm the Browns, I'm pretty satisfied with having Baker as my quarterback. He has his limitations. If he has a good run game
Would you consider him a game manager?
A little bit. I mean, I think he needs a good running game.
Oh, yeah, I think he does,
too. I think he needs a good offensive line. But right now, if I'm the Browns, if I'm a Browns fan, I feel very comfortable with what I have in Baker. He has matured so much from year one to year three. I like the position that Baker's put himself right in. He deserves a lot of credit
And remember, this is a team that did this without Odell Beckham Jr., the number one receiver.
All right.
Or do you think he's not a fan?
Odell Beckham Jr. on this team is not needed. Baker forced the ball so many times to Odell. It was, remember all those times when Ben would force the ball to Brown in playoff games and there would be interceptions? Ben would throw his terrible interceptions against, like, Jacksonville or New England. He'd be forcing the ball into Brown. You know, that's a lot what Baker's doing with OBJ, because OBJ, you know, he wants his targets. He made one great catch, and now he's the best thing ever. He also needs his social media influencing TikToks to rise. They're better with Jarvis Landry, who occasionally talks but goes out there and backs up his play. That's another thing with Juju. He makes a lot of key plays at times. You never see that breakout play from Juju.
Yeah, he doesn't do
that well.
Not anymore.
You see a bunch of those 5-yard slant routes on third down, which are key, critical plays. But Claypool's making the big deep route plays.
Well, you can say that that's not his role anymore, to go make that big play. You can say that's
kind of
Claypool's
job. Go stiff arm a guy, go make a move down the field. All right, maybe create a little bit of space.
Yeah.
You know,
like, I don't know, maybe, I don't know what it
that's
is.
What Landry does. Landry gets an open field, and he's gone at times.
Is it just me, or did it feel like Landry had way more than 6 catches in that playoff game? I felt like he was
Landry typically has like 110 catches a year sometimes.
I know, I just thought he was all over the field, and like his stats were just like, there were 6 catches for 92 yards and a touchdown. I mean, it wasn't like that impressive, but I feel like he was all over the field.
Yeah. So retirement is going to be a constant talk for the Steelers because Pouncey could be retiring. It's rumored to be that he is. And Ben Roethlisberger, people want him gone. Goodbye, Ben. $41 million is too big of a cap hit for you. Now, look, let's be real here. Overreaction Monday is a big thing. And when everybody looks at the 2021 Steelers and they say, oh, my God, Ben's due $41 million. Next year, we obviously everyone knows they can't bring him back at that. But is the realistic thought to cut Ben? Okay, when we know he can still play. He threw for 500 yards in the playoff game to Cleveland. Now I know it was all garbage catch up time, but I really think that and Ben has come out and said it in the last couple of days. Ben, you know, here comes Ben again. He wants the credit. Ben said, I went to the Steelers. I want it to be known that I went to the Steelers, and I asked them, we need to work this out. I need to take a pay cut. Art Rooney said he needs to take a pay cut. Did anybody in the media really believe that Ben, who wants his teammates back, who wants to be able to bring Pounty back, with a cap that's decreasing about $15 million, that wants Juju back, that wants his third corner back, to be able to not take a pay cut? Ben has to be a little realistic with himself, right? He's the most expensive quarterback. He's probably about the 12th or 13th best quarterback, if that. To the fact that Ben's not stupid. He knows he has to take somewhat of a pay cut to be able to come back. And now it's starting to be made that that is going to happen. I think they're going to cut half of that $41 million. I think they have to.
I think they have to, too.
And now both sides are basically in agreement. Yeah, we have to do that. But was the media so out there and so outrageous to believe that Ben's ego was going to be so high, which we know Ben's ego is up there. We know that
he's still a team first guy, though.
Ben loves to draw the headlines. You know, Ben, I'm hurt. I'm going to go to the locker room. Oh, here comes Ben in the fourth quarter. Go lead the team in the last drive. Remember that one game when Ben was started as the backup, and then I don't remember who the quarterback was.
Was it a playoff game?
Maybe it was Rudolph. It wasn't a playoff game, but it was a late in the season game.
Was it this year?
No. It was a couple years ago.
Was it Jarvis Landry?
You mean Jarvis Jones?
Landry Jones. Ben was hurt. Like, his thumb was bothering him.
It was the Bengals playoff game, wasn't it?
Well, he did get knocked out and then came back.
I know he got hurt.
But there was a game that he was like the backup to start the game. And then, you know, Landry's, no. And then all of a sudden, here comes Ben. Leading the team for a victory.
It was probably against the Browns.
So, I mean, Ben is a little dramatic, but I think, was the media a little bit more dramatic than Ben in saying, you can't bring him back? Obviously, you can't bring him back at that cap, but we all know that.
Everybody and their mother.
Everybody's saying that he's washed, he can't play. Look, Ben has his limitations, but he's not 2015 Peyton Manning, where the defense and running game have to completely and utterly carry him. He can still get the ball down the field. He just has an offensive coordinator that was not competent in being able to draw up play schemes that a defense couldn't recognize and easily exploit.
Exactly. I mean, I was going to say it does draw comparisons to, like, that 2015 Peyton Manning. But, I mean, as you said, he's definitely more capable in terms of throwing the ball. I mean, Peyton Manning couldn't throw the ball more than 10 yards downfield.
I think the one thing that with Matt Canada being the offensive coordinator, I think they need to implement a little bit more of that going under center. I know that's not Ben's thing, but they need to do it more. Again,
because it will help the run at the end of the day.
Exactly. You need to disguise some plays, and whether that's under center or not, I think that's something you need to utilize more to your favor, because they didn't do it at all last year, and so many times the linemen were standing up, which is a pass formation, and they were just getting knocked back. That's why when they tried to run the ball, they were already standing up, and instead of being down in the three-point stance and moving forward,
because the defensive line can just easily and
that's why Ben didn't. That's why Ben had to get it out so quickly. Yeah. Or the run game just was not a factor at all last year.
No, and I do feel like I don't think a lot of people understood the impact. And I mean, they talked about. He was talked about. People knew he was good. People don't really understand the value that Mike Munchak had on this team. And
I mean, do you know how many good linemen that dude ended up bringing to this team?
Well, it's not that he brought them into the team. He designed blocking schemes and was able to – he turned DeCastro into an all-pro best guard in football. Marquise Pouncey didn't look his age. Villanueva, who was an undrafted free agent defensive lineman, becomes an offensive tackle and plays really well. Matt Filer played pretty good, too. I mean – at tackle, Ramon Foster, another guy that wasn't highly regarded that much coming out of college, he played really well under Munchak. The blocking scheme figured it out with Le'Veon. I just feel like he was so undervalued. And when he went to Denver, instead of, you know, as people have mentioned, my dad even said, promote him to an assistant head coach.
I think he'd be
something to keep him around. And you see Bill Callahan in Cleveland. Such a valuable offensive line coach for the Browns. They turned Wyatt Teller, a guy who was on a practice squad. He was with the Bills, and he was on someone's practice. Maybe it was the Bills practice squad. Wyatt Teller was like a no-name. They turned him into a top three guard in the NFL under the coaching of Bill Callahan. And they had a tackle they picked in the first round who played Wills, who played really well out of Alabama. He played good. Their whole offense, the Browns' offensive line a couple years ago was garbage.
They went and beefed up the right side. They went and got Conklin.
They added a bunch of guys. And, you know, they could not protect Baker at all this first year.
No.
Now, that's a top five offensive line in the game, and there's no disputing that. They were probably the best offensive line going down the stretch as well. And that's how Baker was able to succeed and be able to do so well late in games and be able to clench and really run out some games.
That's what makes the run game so good.
Yeah. And that's what made the run game stride to be the best in the league other than Baltimore. But
Baltimore has three running backs.
Yeah, including the quarterback.
Exactly.
Yeah, so we won't get into that. But what do you think is next for Ben? Do you think he has to return? Do you think he has to retire quickly before we move on to the Penguins?
I think he can give it one more year. But if he really starts to like go downhill, I think you have to make the decision to not let him play.
You have to throw Rudolph in. I think in the terms of an organizational standpoint, I don't think it's worth having him in there and giving it another lackluster year. I'd rather try to build around Haskins or Rudolph, see what they can put on the table. And if not, then you can go ahead and draft a quarterback. I guess you could do the same for Ben, but I just don't see it anymore. I just don't think he has what it takes.
Well, I think this defense has what it takes, and all he needs to do is just, you know, score.
Do his part.
Yeah, all they need to do is at least score, you know, 21 points a game at the least. And then I think the defense could take him from there.
Yeah. How about we got breaking news for the MLB? This is pretty cool. Ken Griffey Jr. is going to serve as a senior ambassador to the commissioner in the MLB. It's going to be on youth development and improving diversity at all levels of the game. The kid is trying to bring more kids into the game of baseball. But we'll get into baseball a little bit later on. But yeah, Ken Griffey Jr. gets a job with MLB in their front office type executive department. But the Penguins also lose someone in their department of everything. Meaning he was everything to building two Stanley Cup champions. Jim Rutherford, gone. Goodbye. Unexpectedly. Just kind of disappeared. Like, he woke up and was like, you know, I don't want to go. I don't want to show up for work today. I don't want to be the GM. Mario, yeah. Here's my resignation. He didn't give us 2 weeks. He didn't say, like, yeah, you know.
I'm gone.
I'll finish out the month. See ya. Goodbye. I'm done.
Well.
What? What? Okay.
Let's be real
here.
He was kind of running this team into the ground.
And also, he's old.
Yeah,
he's 71.
Right. Well, dude, to his past 10 years, he did the same thing in Carolina.
He is old. And remember at the beginning, he was like, oh, yeah, this is going to be a 3-year thing. So your first year, they do pretty good. Win the cup. Go win the cup again. By year three, you're like, oh, you can't get rid of Jim Rutherford. You know, he's going to be here a couple more years. I don't get it. The fact that, you know, Mario was shocked. He had no idea.
No one knew
up until, you know, I was listening to the fan. Rob Rossi was on with Mueller and Filippone. And Rossi was supposed to do an interview with Alvin, the new GM. Yeah. He was supposed to do a story with him. And Rossi said he had to cancel early in the morning, like 9:30, because he has something going on. But at that point, at 9:30, you would think the new Penguins GM, if he knew at the time, would have to say, oh, well, we got stuff going on. We're going to have to talk at another time. No, they didn't know. The news broke at, like, I think it was like 2:30, 2:15 the news broke. The Penguins didn't know early on in the day that this was happening. They must have found out at like noon. Jim Rutherford, you know, he went to breakfast. He was sipping his coffee.
You know what?
Mario. I'm a little tired here. I'm kind of tired of not seeing my family and kind of stuck in quarantine. I'm gonna hang it up now. I'm done.
I need a new gig.
You know, we won some stuff. We won some cups. You know, we're pretty good. But you know, goodbye. Click.
That's exactly how it was.
And that's what happened. What I don't get is why make it this? Why an organization that's given you a lot, given you complete and utter control of the roster, for really final say on everything? You know, Mario trusts you, Ron Burkle trusts you, David Morehouse trusts you, but you don't even give the courtesy to look, did I want to, what I want to know is, did Rutherford go to bed the night before saying, yeah, I'm just going to go relax the rest of the day, kick my feet up and watch this team struggle to figure out what goes on next. You know, we can't win a game in regulation. Game we play is in overtime. So I just don't understand why Rutherford didn't tell anybody. Did he even know? What was the factor? And they say it's not health related. Well, I don't.
It could be something family related.
I don't 100% agree. Well, I don't 100% think that.
I did look around and see some sources say that is because he wanted to.
Wanted to be with his daughter.
Yes,
because he wanted to trade Letang.
Oh, I did hear that too.
And then the ownership.
Mario said no. Mario said you're not trading Letang.
And then maybe that's what. Maybe he's like, I don't have control of this team anymore. Like you said, because he gave him that control. Okay, I guess he didn't want it.
So did Mario? Okay, so let's say hypothetically. Let's say Wednesday. That's when GM JR decided I'm done. Let's say that there was a trade in the works at like 11:30, and Rutherford's ready to trade Letang to X team and get X prospects. You know, whatever. And he goes to Mario because Mario's got to confirm it. Mario, you got to go to ownership. Got to make sure ownership's okay with it. And Mario's like, no, you're not trading Letang. You see, what this really makes me wonder. All the Malkin trade rumors in the past,
they were probably true.
What if this was Malkin on the doorstep and it was Mario that shot those down too? Could it be a possibility
of just accumulation?
Could it be an accumulation of Malkin? They tried to trade Malkin multiple different times, but Mario shot that down. And now they're trying to trade Letang. And let's say that the trade was on the doorstep of being completed. It was in the final stages of being processed, and maybe even physicals were about to be sent out. That Rutherford was a little upset that Mario was overriding these decisions because of what Malkin have meant to the team in the past, which I get it from a Rutherford standpoint of these guys are good, but they're not as good as they used to be, especially during their times when they won cups.
I think Letang's been flat out awful.
Yeah, and I mean, Malkin's been a ghost at times too.
Both of them been invisible, sort of.
I mean, like you said, we all saw the 2-0 against the Bruins a couple games ago.
Oh yeah, that was horrendous.
That was awful. But I mean, again,
sort of epitomized that what the team's going through right now.
Yeah, it's gonna be
Their superstars.
Yeah, it's gonna be a rough season. I mean, Sid's look fine.
Yeah, I mean,
Jake Guentzel looks pretty good.
It's gonna take a while for Crosby to wear down, but it's hit Malkin hard. I think Letang's making just simple, dumb mistakes, which it's plagued his career
his career.
And that's why he's never been a Norris Trophy candidate. That's why he's never
He's been a candidate, I believe, but he's never won it.
That's why he's never been viewed as the best defenseman, because he always has those mistakes. It's always hurt him.
He's always got there due to his offensive production.
Another guy that looks bad, John Marino. That was the last contract that Rutherford signed anybody to. Not looking great so far. I think he'll bounce back.
But I think it's a great signing, actually. I mean, I know he's not playing well now, but I mean, for the amount of money they signed him for the potential that he truly has, I mean, that contract could end up being a steal in the upcoming years.
I still think though that trading Matt Murray, you know, I know you guys don't like Murray.
Murray. Murray's not doing well either this year, so.
Murray's not doing that good.
Well, I mean, cuz he's on a team that's not really.
I still think though if I would rather have Tristan Jarry, Casey Smith or Matt Murray, I still take Matt Murray. Now, I know that you're paying him more money. You'd have to pay him more money than you'd be paying these other guys. But Tristan Jarry don't do it for me, man. I don't. When I watch his game, he's bad goals. He looks slow.
The one thing I don't like that I liked from Murray is Murray was just bigger, larger, lengthier. Yeah. I just like that aspect. I like a goalie that has the length to him, and so usually they're typically better. Bishop, Andre Vasilevsky, longer, lengthier guys, and they're good. But Murray had his weaknesses, obviously.
Oh, yeah. His blocker side was terrible.
No, his blocker side was the best part.
Or his glove side.
And also, I was watching a game earlier this year. There was a goal that just, like, went right through him. Like, it just, like, found its way in. It was like, that's been what's hurting him his whole career. But Jari's not looked any better, so.
Well, I mean, I said this from the start. I mean, Murray and Jari are the same age. I mean, Murray's accomplished way more.
Yeah.
Jari's never – I don't think Jari has played 82 career games.
Jari would be – well, I think he has, but Jari would be
– I don't think he has, dude. He's played in like NHL, maybe
– combining these games, he's probably around like 70.
He's probably near it,
he's probably around like 72.
I'm going to look, but he's been around the team for
look it up.
Long.
He's probably around 72. But, Nate, where do the Pens go from here? What do they do? Now that you don't have a GM, that search is going to be going on. I don't know who you hire. I think Pierre Maguire is kind of – that name's kind of worn out.
He has 68 career games.
Yeah, Maguire was an option, though, back in, like, 2014, they didn't give him the job.
I don't know if he would still be an option.
There's options out here. I'm looking at it right now. I think Jason Botterill, who was in the system before, who was in with the Penguins
but
before.
But he was not very good with the Sabres.
Yeah. Ron Hextall, which is a very interesting – he was good at developing guys and drafting, but when it came to NHL-level production, just didn't get the right guys.
Yeah.
Other guys on this list, Chris Drury, Mark Hunter, Tom Fitzgerald, all sorts of guys. Peter Chiarelli. A lot of people don't like that idea.
If you thought the Marino contract was bad, go look at Milan Lucic.
Well, yeah, somebody even brought up the fact that – I think it was Rossi again. I don't know. When I was listening to Initial Reaction, is it that bad of an idea to make Mike Sullivan temporarily like the GM? I think it would. I do not think that you should give the power to Mike Sullivan to be coach and GM. We've seen how awful that's been. Chip Kelly with the Eagles, Bill O'Brien with the Texans. We've seen how bad that can be in sports franchises.
Also because that's like two loads on his plate, and I don't even think it's worth putting any coach in that situation to let them try to handle that. I think that's way too much.
Has that happened in the NHL? I feel like someone has given a coach like that power.
Maybe an assistant coach, but maybe
I feel like I don't know who it would have been.
I know. Was Bill Guerin ever an assistant coach? Because obviously he's the GM up in Minnesota now. I don't think so.
I don't know. But let's move on to the Pirates real quick. So they traded Musgrove, they traded Bell, they traded Jameson Taillon, and they got a lot of prospects. And some of the guys they get back, like they got Hudson Head, they got Omar Cruz, getting those guys from San Diego for Joe Musgrove. And Eddie Yean coming in the Josh Bell deal along with Will Crow. Will Crow, 26, starting pitcher, had depth arm, fourth or fifth guy. What they are doing, and what they have to do, is trade absolutely everyone that has a name on the back of the jersey that's played for about 3 or 4 years.
And that
in
includes Polanco.
You can't trade Polanco.
Polanco has
no value.
I think you give him to the deadline. I thought they should have kept Taillon until the deadline as well.
Well, at the same time, he's not pitched in like 2 years.
But also, he could have pitched terribly, and then you would have not gotten any return. So, yeah. I mean, they probably made the right move in that decision. A lot of moves are surrounding this team.
Yeah.
The kind of path we're taking, it's like, please. Someone turn into something.
And then please, someone take these guys that we're giving away. Just give us what we can, what we can take.
Yeah, and look, my phone was blowing up the last couple days after those trades with texts from family members, friends saying, "I am so done with this Pirates team. This is so terrible."
It's the right thing.
Everybody,
they did the thing they needed to do.
People. Ever since 2016, this team did not have a damn direction. They did not whatsoever. They were caught in the middle. The worst place to be in sports is right smack dab in the middle.
It's like we were kind of like – I wouldn't even say that's Minnesota. Where they were. They were kind of like the Minnesota Wild.
They were right in the middle. But the prospects are looking okay. Like Key Brian Hayes was ranked 9th overall in the MLB.com rankings that were released last night. Quinn Priester was in the 50s, around 52. 54. O'Neill Cruz was like 62. Nick Gonzalez was in the 40s. So you have some guys that are nationally liked. Quinn Priester's been jumping off the charts. He's been throwing around 98. You get some guy, Yahoo Ray. You got him from the Yankees.
Yahoo!
Yeah, Pirates fans got something to cheer about. Andy Rodriguez is a catcher, outfielder guy type player that they got from the Mets. I mean, they have a lot of options. They got two Rule 5 guys. They like Cannon Smith from the Yankees a lot. He supposedly has some big-time power that's going to pop off eventually at some point. So I think it's really interesting, just the guys that they acquired. And, you know, it's going to be rough. It's going to be a tough task to be able to do anything for this team moving forward in the next couple of years. But I think that the fans just have to be realistic with what's going on here. They picked a direction. They're sticking with it. But Dan Charrington is not – he's not, you know, sugarcoating it. This is a team that has to get rid of all their pieces. Frazier's next. After Frazier, I don't think you can trade anybody else. Maybe you get rid of I don't think Polanco has any value right now. Maybe you can get rid of him at the deadline. But maybe Chad Kuhl, but you also need guys to be able to fill out your roster, fill out your rotation. So I feel like the team is going to be really bad for another year, another 2 years. But when you're looking at guys like Kumar Rocker taking number one overall, Elijah Green in the 2022 draft. Now, look, I know they're prospects and you got to develop them, but I'm going to trust Ben Charrington to be able to develop him and his guys to be able to develop these guys. And, you know, there's no hope right now for the Pirates because all the guys are in A-ball and no fans are going to say Yahoo A-ball guys, but that's kind of the Yahoo Ray A-ball, in A-ball, but that's kind of the way you got to look at it, that you're not going to see these guys for a couple years. We get it. You're going to have to accept it, but in a couple of years, this team's going to have a lot of stacked talent on
hopefully,
it.
Hopefully.
Well, I mean, Lyevo, Pregero, Hudson Head, those are going to be first-round pick. Those are going to be top 100 guys. So you're going to have six by the middle of the year. Kumar Rocker's going to immediately slot into the top 20 of the rankings. I think Brennan Malone's going to be really good. He could rise. And then you're talking about, like, Jared Jones, who's a young guy that they drafted, or anybody else. Mason Martin gets you 30 bombs a year. They have guys.
I mean, there's a lot of optimistic surrounding this team, but hopefully in the future, as we're talking about the guys and the talent that they could potentially have, I mean, look at the Athletics and look at the Rays. Yeah. They're teams that are consistently competing for playoff spots nowadays.
Houston Astros, Cubs build it up through being bad.
Hopefully, but you're talking about teams with low payroll too, right? The A's and the Rays.
Right,
hopefully
right.
They can figure, Pirates can find the talent and stick with it, and hopefully they have a sustained success for at least 5 years with the guys they're building through
now. Yeah, I mean, because like the Cubs were really bad, but you know, they did have, you know, certain people that they signed that they ended up coming in, I think Dexter Fowler, that they ended up bringing Fowler, who was a great player for them. And then just stuff like that just goes down the line. Like
Jake Arrieta.
I forget about that team. I think Arrieta.
Well, I can't forget about that team.
That video of Kyle Schwarber taking Gerrit Cole into the Allegheny, that lives rent free in my head.
I was there for that. That was miserable.
It was one of the most, like,
and the amount of Cubs fans that were there was insane.
It was one of the most rudely hit, like, baseball I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was bad. But let's go into our 1 minute rants, the segment we started a couple shows ago. You get 1 minute. Talk about whatever you want, rant about whatever you want, yell, scream, do whatever you want, but just don't be too loud so I don't have to adjust the levels that much.
All right.
I don't
go to rant right now.
Okay, Nick, go ahead.
What? Oh, okay.
whoever wants to go. Cause
let's talk about the Penguins a bit. Where are we in this situation? Especially, I want to look at goaltending. What is going on with Tristan Jarry and Casey Smith? Tristan Jarry is sort of making me furious because he was the guy. He knew he was eventually going to be in this position. He knew that as soon as he was drafted. The Penguins were so high on him in the prospect system. They were so high on him and wanted him to be this number one guy, their bona fide number one starter. And here he is, sort of just letting it
slip
unfold
away.
Right in front of him. Yes, slip away. He's doing a terrible job. He doesn't look like a realistic number one guy. I mean, Casey DeSmith has looked better than him, and that's kind of sad because, I mean, DeSmith's not bad by any means, but he's not a number one guy. And Jarry and this defense, and also can't forget about the defense and what they're putting together, even though the injuries are mounting, which is not good, but defense has not been good either. When guys are healthy, Cody Ceci does not look good. Mike Matheson was terrible in his first few games. We talked about Marino, Letang, all these guys. It's not really – there's not one or two guys that are playing bad. It's the whole core. It's the goaltending is struggling too. I don't know what the direction is right now. I don't know what they're going to do once they get a GM in there. I'm assuming they're probably going to stick with the team, maybe make one move. But I don't know if this team makes the playoffs at this point. The way they're playing, they might be a bubble team. They might be right outside.
My prediction was right. But I want to talk about the Steelers. I mean, this team had its issues, and then, you know, you went and go produce 11-5 season. Then you get smoked by the team you said that we would never, by a team like we all thought we would never get smoked to, in the Browns. But I mean, there's so many questions to this team. I mean, of course, I mean, I feel like we personally should go sign Mike Hilton. I think Mike Hilton is really good. I mean, Sutton never really Sutton never really did it for me. I like how Hilton plays. He's always out there making plays. And then you have the Bud Dupree issue. You know, he just tore – was it a torn ACL? Can someone
– Yeah.
Bud, yeah, it was a torn ACL. I mean, do you take a chance on a guy that just tore his ACL at a position where – due to his ability, speed is his most important factor. What if that speed's gone? Do you have to take a chance and end up getting rid of him? And then you took Devin Bush. You have a whole bunch of people coming back from an ACL injury, which ACL injuries are very difficult to come back from. And then, of course, as we talked about for like what it felt like forever, what do you do with Juju? Do you keep him? I have the word on, he might take a pay cut because, I mean, he makes so much money off endorsements anyways. He might have to end up taking a pay cut. And there's just so many questions around this team, and I don't even know what we're going to do next year because, you know, the North is stacked. The North is a very stacked division, and I don't know where the Steelers are going to end up placing if they keep having these issues.
Asterisks are a thing in all sports. 2017 Houston Astros. Patriots Spygate Deflategate. MLB overall home run totals in the home run king. Hank Aaron is the home run king, and you can't convince me otherwise. Asterisks, they don't necessarily belong in sports, but they exist. Where asterisks shouldn't exist is in the Hall of Fame, and more specifically, in the Baseball Hall of Fame. Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens don't do it for me. I get the fact that they were Hall of Famers before the alleged PED use, which you could say alleged all you want. It happened. Barry Bonds did not lose all his hair magically and blow up like a lead balloon just for no reason. The 98 season changed a lot of things for Bonds. He saw McGuire, he saw Sosa constantly hitting home runs and breaking home run records. Bonds was the guy that could do everything. He'd steal you a base, he'd play good defense, he'd hit 45 home runs, he'd drive in a bunch of runs, and he'd still win MVPs. But he was not getting the attention that Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire were getting for the home run race of 98. So, what did he do? He decided the only thing to do to compete on their level was to match their level of using steroids. And if anybody believes for a second that Bonds and Clemens should be in the Hall of Fame based off of they were Hall of Famers before they took steroids, what if you're a racer and what if you're in anything you do and you do something really, really well for a long time, a majority of the time, and you cheat and you lie through something and you deceive people into believing that this was your true self and this is what you were made to be based on the merits of your own hard work? Why should anyone accept that? Why should anyone allow that? The Hall of Fame is a prestigious place, and you really are going to put cheaters in it? I think the writers understand that. I don't think fans understand it because they see how great Bonds was, and they see the videos, the home runs. They see Clemens, how fiery he was, and just the player that he was. But you cannot tell me that is any excuse for putting them in the Hall of Fame. I don't get it. I don't buy it. There's a character clause in baseball that says that you got to evaluate character, and that's why Curt Schilling maybe shouldn't get in. I don't agree with that. I think Curt Schilling was so dominant on the mound that he's got to get in. But for Bonds and Clemens, for A-Rod, for Sammy Sosa still on the ballot, Gary Sheffield alleged allegations, I understand the argument that, yes, there might be a steroid guy or two in the Hall of Fame. But at a point, the line can't be crossed. The line cannot be tolerated. You're going to tell me that Hank Aaron and Babe Ruth, along with Barry Bonds, should be considered in the same sentence because they mean something and you can't tell the story of baseball without them? Well, a lot of people can't tell you the story of baseball at all now because they left the sport because of them. All right, predictions. Penguins going forward, what do you guys see happening?
I just see sort of a mess a little bit. I don't think it's going to be terrible, but they might miss the playoffs. That's my prediction.
I see a team that'll go out and surprise you, win a couple games against good teams. But all in all, they're just going to end up falling apart or getting off to slow starts, and I think this team's going to miss the playoffs.
I think it's going to be a struggle. I think it's going to be tough, but I think they might sneak in as the final spot, but I don't know if they're going to find any stability.
I've talked about this with a couple of my buddies. Mm-hmm. Three spots are locked up. The spot for Boston, mm-hmm. and the spot for Philly, and the spot for Washington are locked. It's a battle for that fourth spot, and it's going to be either the Islanders.
The team that I thought would be in there is the Rangers, and they're not playing too well, except Lafreniere gets his first goal.
Right. Does Marquise Pouncey retire, or does Ben convince him to come back?
I think
he retires.
You think he retires? I think Ben might. I mean, he's doing it for Ben. If Ben's going to play one more year, he might as well play one more year as well.
Yeah, I think he comes back. I think Ben convinced him. All right, shout-outs. Go ahead, Nate.
Just shout-out to anyone who listens. Shout-out to the parents, mom and dad, as they'll probably – don't think they're listening now, but they might listen later on the podcast edition. Shout-out to Corn, as always, as she sometimes listens. So shout-out to those people.
Aw, how sweet. But I would like to say thank you to my mother, my father. I forgot to tell them the time of the show, so I know for a fact that they're not listening.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I know for a fact they're not listening, but thank you for everything. Shout out Alex. I don't like you.
No, that's nice.
But he gives us clicks and he gives us listens. So at the end of the day, that's all that matters. But thank you guys. Thank you very much.
Oh, wow. That was very touching.
Very sentimental guy.
Yeah. Shout out to my mom and my dad. And my mom was very excited that I made the Dean's List. So she sent it to all the family members. Which I don't know why five different group chats is necessary, but my mom was very excited. So
does someone have a Samsung?
Thank you, Mom. No, maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
Because Samsung's every time you have to resend a text, you make a different group chat.
That's terrible. But shout out to them. Shout out to my family as always. That does it for the first show back of the semester. I think we're all tired from this first week back of being in person classes and being back with TV, radio, everything. It's a lot, but we take it in stride.
That's what we're here for. We
don't even have any music to close out with, but that's okay.
Oh, wait, no, I do. Actually, I do have a song. I just have to pull it up real quick.
Yeah, today on January 29th, 2021, first show of 2021.
A classic.
Can you believe that? And Golbash is a classic for us. Oh, it's Blinded by the Lights. How about that? And guess what? The Weeknd. Super Bowl 55. You ever see that Twitter account that says, "Ladies and gentlemen, The Weeknd" on Twitter? Great.
I just don't think I have.
It's awesome. But Ball and the Bird. First show back. We're happy to be back. Austin Bechtold.
Andrew Golbach.
Nate Bersinger.
This is the show for this week. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. Take care, and we'll see what happens. Up until then.